When we touch the world with love, it touches us back with blessing and love. So today I'm going to talk about St. Francis, how he inspires me, and my sense of who he was, and mystically who he still is. You know, he's in almost every garden in the town. He's in probably every church. So just in summary, I love the way he touches creation with incredible intimacy and compassion. The world is not things to him. It's beloved, brothers and sisters. The two-legged, the four-legged, the rocks, the trees, all of it is his beloved family. All of it reflects his beautiful God, and he touches it with joy and great care. And the other thing I'd like to say about him is Francis is somebody who knows God. And we can learn from him. So a brief history. He's actually born Giovanni. He had an Italian father and a French mother, and his father called him Francesco, the Frenchman. He was born in 1181. In Assisi, in Italy. He had many siblings, and he was a part of a very wealthy middle-class family of merchants. His dad was a silk and cloth merchant. So for half his life, he was part of that world, and the other half, for 20 years, he was a monk. He was actually the most successful monk, I think, of all time. There's currently, right now, 350,000 members in the Third Order of St. Francis. Now, right? And back then, there was just hundreds and hundreds of people started abandoning their life. They chose this way, which the Pope said was too difficult and was beyond reasonable for Francis to ask this. And a few people, and then many more, and then thousands followed him. Very successful. But you know, when he was younger, he was a playboy, and he wanted to be somebody really special. He fancied himself as a knight. He was the life and soul of the party. He liked to drink. He liked women. His mother said, "Our son behaves more like a little prince than our son." And a transformation happens in his life. He is like that little caterpillar that goes into the cocoon for about 5 years. There's a transformation that happens and then comes out as this incredible butterfly. Last Sunday I was speaking to small children about St. Francis. I had this statue with me which they tried to climb. And do you know why they wanted to climb it? It was so they could get the water and bless their family. It was so cute. And I showed them some imagery of a caterpillar changing into a butterfly and asked them if it was the same creature, and they said, "No. It's not the same creature." And I said, I think it is. You know, I think it is the same creature, it's just transformation. And St. Francis is a great example of a human who, in his ego and sense of life, was very self-focused and then transformed into somebody that there was no separation between him and the rest of the creation. And that brought him so much joy. So when he's 20, he joins the military, fancies himself as a knight, goes off to fight the first of two battles, and he gets captured and put in prison for a year. Dark prison. And he is ill. And when he comes back, the riches of the world don't seem to have a hold on him in the same way. And after he gets caught the second time, he starts wandering around as a beggar and spending a lot of time in nature, distancing himself from a fancy society, but also from his family. His mother, in particular, was very concerned about him. And then a mystical experience destroys his life. I don't know if any of you have ever had a mystical experience that you're like, "Oh, no. Everything changes." That happened to St. Francis. He was very lost and and finding God out in the quiet places. And he used to go into this ruined chapel to pray. And one time when he was in there praying, the crucifix on the wall spoke to him and it said, "Francis, Francis, rebuild my church, which as you can see is in ruins." And he changed his whole life at that point. And also circumstance helped propel him out. So what happened was he heard that and he was like, okay, this place is in ruins. I need to rebuild it. How am I going to do that? So he sneaks into his dad's house, takes some cloth, sells it to buy the materials, and starts rebuilding. His father comes back from being away in business and is furious. Francis hides for a month, finally comes home, and his dad beats the hell out of him and locks him up. And after a few days, his mom lets him out and he is released. And his father summons him to the bishop's court in Assisi and tells him that he's a thief and he has no right to do this. And in that square with everybody watching, Francis says, "God is my father. I renounce this man and his ways." And he gives him back his cloth, including the clothes that he's wearing, the fancy clothes. He strips them off, butt naked. And supposedly the bishop gives them a cloak to wear. And he walks away. And that's the start of this man who, we make this look really fancy, but really he used to wear a beggar's robe with a piece of string. You must have seen people that wear like, I don't know if they're dressing gowns or bathrobes. You know, people on the street, I see them with like a belt or string tied around them. That was St. Francis. He looked like a mentally ill homeless beggar. And his new life, he took vows of celibacy and poverty. And he started an experiment of being a friar, a monk in a different way that was kind of halfway between being a traditional monk and a priest that would go out, except for he didn't own anything. So what Francis did in this new way of living was he tried to imitate Christ. He was itinerant and he preached to the poor. And around this time in Europe, cities were forming and there was a lot of poor gathering. And the monks had always been in monasteries. They'd done trades. They were separate from the people. So Francis was among the people. He would walk in nature. We know that a lot, that he would preach to the birds, but he also spent time with the lepers and the people who were poor. And he lived his life in a very new way that I think isn't... we know that that's what friars do and that's what a lot of nuns and monks do. But back then, they didn't do that. This was revolutionary. He went to the Pope to ask for permission. And the Pope said, "What you're asking is too much of people, for them to live in poverty and to own nothing, not even to have a house. To be completely dependent on the weather and the goodwill of people, this isn't fair, but you can do it if you want to." And he did it. So I want to first of all talk a little bit about poverty. It's the aspect of St. Francis that people kind of gloss over. And I think that we in America, the richest country in the world, could learn a lot from him. So poverty for him was part of how he imitated Jesus. But it was also, he was married to it, he called it Lady Poverty, and it brought him great joy. He shared everything and gave it away. But he was also entirely available to God's call in every moment. Like, I think about that a lot. How much time do I spend tending my house, going to work, driving to work, worrying about work? Now, I'm lucky, I'm a minister, so some of the work that I do really is about connecting with the sacred around me. We are so, you know, when you have things, you have to look after them. People often ask me, "Why don't you have a wooden boat, Simon? You're a boat builder. Have you seen how much time it takes to maintain a wooden boat? How on earth would I respond to God's call to love people if I had a wooden boat? No way." In one of the unofficial Gospels, I searched for it last night and I couldn't find the reference. I think it's the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. Jesus says, do not let your possessions bind you. Francis teaches us that things do not bring us happiness. Sharing and being generous do. I think we know this already. Filling the void inside us with inanimate things is harming creation. We all know this, and it must stop. It is an urgent spiritual question for us. So I invite us over the next week to think about, are we hoarding? Are we maintaining an empire of things that we don't need? Or are the things in our life just there? Right. A really shocking thing for me was I went to meet a Native American elder, and she lived in this big fancy house. And then I found out she used to be a rock star. And I'm like, this big fancy house built by somebody in NASA. This woman used to be a rock star. What kind of Native American is she? And then I found out that she didn't have any Native American blood in her at all. And I'm like sitting there going, this is weird. And I went into her house, and her house was full of things. And I'm like, I don't understand. But she's amazing. And I went away and I came back. And then the second time, I noticed that in her drawers in her kitchen, there was nothing there. The only things that she had in her house were sacred objects and chairs. She didn't even really have pots for hospitality. She didn't care about anything other than holding the sacred in this space. And that made me realize, oh, this is more complicated than giving everything away and joining St. Francis. We need to, on an individual basis, look at what allows us to do the work we were born to do. And maybe you need a bunch of carpentry tools or musical instruments. The point is not to just go with the social consumption. It's for us to actively choose our lives and actively choose our levels of generosity and giving. And I can tell you that I know when people have less, it's easier for them to give. I have witnessed that over and over and over. Scotland, supposedly, I think this is true, is more generous with charity, but also the poorest part of the United Kingdom. When you have less, it's easier to share. Anyway, I want to tell you about how I met St. Francis. I met St. Francis because in 2006, I went to live on Iona in a modern-day abbey. And I didn't know very much about Christianity. I didn't know anything about St. Francis. But there was a postcard that had the prayer of St. Francis on it, and I thought, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I'm going to write that into a song. And this is the song. Thank you.
Lord, make me a channel of your peace. Through my own pain and need, I will learn to understand. Reach through our sorrow, let it be joy. Oh, let it be joy. Lord, make me a channel of peace in my life.
So one of the things we need to do as individual humans is open ourselves to a wisdom beyond self. Francis is a big teacher of that. Made me a channel. And one of the best ways we can do that is by putting the prayers of other people, especially prayers that are prayed by millions of people, into ourselves. And we do that by reading and by speaking out loud. And even better, if we sing it. You know, the world was sung into being. There's something about singing that co-creates an energy. And in me writing that song, just because it caught my eye, I think my life changed a lot. And it became my path to follow Jesus and to follow St. Francis. I'd already known, I'd already had a mystical experience in which I realized that Jesus was asking me to follow him. I had this conversion experience that was like, oh no! I think I once told you that story. I was like, no, I just want to agree with the masters. I don't want to actually have to live their life. Especially when so many examples of Christianity make me want to poke my eyes out. But Francis is different. Francis is different. He's a beautiful, beautiful example of that Christ consciousness. Where am I here? So you know that wonderful prayer St. Francis, it's on your sheet, we're going to see it later. It actually wasn't written by Francis at all. The first time it appeared was 1913. I know you're going to go home crying now. It first appeared just before World War I in France, in French. And all the scholars say that it is true to the spirit of St. Francis, but it absolutely was not written by him. Its use of language is too modern, and it's too I, me, myself. Francis was, he didn't really care about himself very much, and he didn't talk in a subjective way all that much. He really talked about God out there. So what does St. Francis teach me? He teaches me that one of the ways you know God is to love God. There's awe and abandon in the way that he responds to the sacred around him, and it brings him great joy. He's the holy fool. He has the awe and abandon of my child self, the part of me that would just run to the good thing without worrying whether I'll be received, without worrying, oh, maybe that's a mistake. And friends, we live in dangerous times where it is really important that we don't sit on the fence. If we think a new thing is bringing about healing and love, we need to go and be part of that. And then once we're part of that and adding our energy to it, then we can decide, oh, maybe that's not such a good thing. It is not the time for sitting on the fence. If God is right there, why would we let anything get in the way? My need to be right is far less important than my need to make a connection with the sacred mystery. You know, remember, Francis is somebody who strips off naked and just walks off. He's somebody that will join the beggars outside and ask for food. His pride isn't high on his agenda at all. There's something about the way that he loves God in creation that's important too. Right? So Episcopalians have this wonderful phrase, we love because God loves us first. And I talk about that a lot. In my youth work with young men and stuff, I can't expect respect and love from them unless I have modeled that to them for maybe a year first. We bring about love by sharing with others, and then they, you know, like Vygotsky calls it the zone of proximal development. There's a way in which we can pull people up and love is the force that does that tremendously. And St. Francis teaches me about that. Don't worry about being right and wrong and whether you're going to be loved back. Do it anyway. Be reckless in your loving. Rumi says that love is the bridge between you and everything else. Love is the bridge between you and everything else. I think that's really true. So the second thing about St. Francis is praise. I'm going to sing my Canticle of the Creatures. I've got a whole spiel about it. I think I can demonstrate it much better if I sing about it. So in the meditation I said, in a very real way, the world becomes what we see it to be. We have an influence over how the world responds to us, how people respond to us. And so much of that is whether we can see the healing and the beauty and God's presence. If we're able to see that, we can unlock that in our lives and share it with others and co-create. It's pretty exciting. I do say so myself. So this is Canticle of the Creatures. This is a prayer that really was written by St. Francis when he was 44, my age. I've got some spare copies here for you to take home later. Francis died when he was my age. There's a statue of him over there with a white beard and all, but there it is. I'm like, you haven't done your history. He was young. He was vibrant. He chose a life that maybe meant that he didn't get all that good nutrition and food. And he died young. And just before he died, he finished this Canticle of the Creatures. And this is my interpretation of his 800-year-old prayer. Most high, all powerful, precious God, spoken word can hold your name. Praise be to you who births all life with all your creatures. Especially you, sir, brother, son. Through the night.
strong and playful. There you are. There you are. Most high, all powerful, precious God. Through Mother Earth, we see your face. You who govern all of life, sustain and nurture all that is. The sister death, first and last breath, the key unlocking all we are. There we are.
What jumps out from that prayer? What do you hear?
There you are.
There you are, yeah.
Presence.
It's all one.
I missed that one.
It's all one.
Yeah, it's all one.
We have arrived.
We have arrived. It's right here. The sacred is in the palm of our hand. It's hard to feel that on our own, and it's really fantastic that there's this spiritual lineage that we can tap into. We're not separate from God in the natural world. It's our job to praise that, to see it, and to offer ourselves as a channel. Thank you for listening.
The peace of the earth be with you, peace of the heavens too. Peace of the rivers be with you, peace of the oceans too. Deep peace falling over you, God's peace grows. Falling over you, God.